your baby is still waking at night and you're wondering why, then this episode is for you. I'm catching up with our regular guest, Julia. She's mum to 10 and a half month old Aurelia, and we are going to troubleshoot a twice at night wake up. We break down the three biggest culprits behind night wakings at this stage, which are nutrition habits and separation anxiety. And then we look at what you can do to help your baby and also you get better sleep. But today's episode is not all about sleep. This stage is also packed with exciting milestones, and we dive into one of the most important ones, and you won't believe it's actually pointing. We talk about why it matters and how it shapes your baby's communication skills. We've got all the insights on that one. And finally, if your baby is on the move, like Aurelia is, it's time to talk about baby-proofing your home. From wobbly little walkers to curious little hands, we have got everything covered so that you know exactly what you need to do around the home to make sure that your little one is safe. So the key takeaways from this episode are the real reasons that your 10-month-old is waking at night, how to support strong communication skills at this age, and baby-proofing for a safe and stress-free home. So don't go away, stay tuned, because we are going to be covering all things for the 10-month-old.
Welcome to Sense by Megfora, the podcast that's brought to you by ParentSense, the app that takes guesswork out of parenting. If you're a new parent, then you are in good company. Your host, Meg Forer, is a well-known OT, infant specialist, and the author of 8 parenting books. Each week, we are going to spend time with new mums and dads just like you to chat about the week's wins, the challenges, and the questions of the moment. Subscribe to the podcast, download the ParentSense app, and catch Makia every week to make the most of that first year of your little one's life. And now, meet your host.
Welcome back, mums and dads. Always a pleasure to have you join me. I'm Meg Forer, and this is Sense by Meg Forer. And today we have a regular guest again, Julia. Welcome, Julia.
Thanks, Meg. Thank you for having me again.
We have been following an incredible journey with little Aurelia. She is around 9 months old now, isn't she?
10.
Oh, it has flown.
Yeah, and it's funny because so many people say to me, oh, how old's your baby? 5 months? I'm like, no, we're nearly one. I think for everybody else, it also feels like it's gone quickly.
Yeah, no, it is unbelievable. But it's such a precious age, this one, where they're busy and hectic, but it's just, they're so cute, aren't they?
Yeah, let me tell you, she's lucky she's cute, because otherwise I think I would have thrown her out the window by now.
I know, babies are designed like that. Those very big heads, big eyes, the cuteness. So you actually will keep them on for a while.
Yeah, biology is a miracle. Otherwise, yeah, she would have been in danger of being left on the side of the road, I think.
Tell me what the challenges are.
Well, so I think the last time that we chatted, I had had already a few weeks of kind of struggling with her nighttime sleep. And, you know, for anybody who has been listening for a long time, she's always been a sort of quote unquote good baby. She, you know, slept, not that she sort of sleeps through super, super often, but she does sleep through every now and then. And certainly when she does wake up, normally it would be like once a night and fairly easy to put down and I could manage it. And then in sort of over the course of the last now, probably 2 months, I think it must be, this night sleep has just gotten very, very messy. And I think that in reality, you know, I appreciate your input on this, but my sense is that it's a combination of factors to do with the fact that she was sick for a number of weeks with different things. So there was a snotty nose and then there was a tummy bug and now she's got a snotty nose again. And then I suspect quite a lot of teething. And in the last day or so, I've found an incisor that's coming down. So that's obviously definitely kind of been playing into it as well, because there has been a lot of kind of pain crying, you know, she's got quite a specific pain crying. So I do know when she's sore. And obviously it's like a very tricky developmental age because she's crawling a lot. She's standing and bouncing and trying to walk, although not quite with any success just yet. But yeah, so there's just a lot going on. And I think that that's all you know, working together to maybe be a bit disruptive. And so the one thing that I have tried since the last time we spoke was to be a bit stricter about her daytime sleep. We discussed a kind of shorter 45-minute odd nap in the morning and then maybe an hour and a half later in the day, kind of just after lunch, which is what we have been doing. And I think that under normal circumstances that probably does work, but I think because we've been battling things like teething and illness, we're not really getting anywhere with it. And I'm just having to remind myself that I have to ride the wave. So that's where we are.
Goodness me. And how often is she waking up?
So funnily enough, look, I mean, it varies. If you'd asked me this question a week ago, I probably would have given you a different answer. But at the moment, she's doing a very funny thing where she wakes up like between 10 and 11, which of course she hasn't done since she was a teeny tiny baby. So that's not very fun because normally I have just closed my eyes. And then she'll sometimes wake again around one or, well, and or closer to 4 o'clock. And then that at 4 o'clock, I normally give her a bottle because I need her to go back to sleep. And that's the kind of, yeah, that's normally the pattern, certainly for the last week or so.
Yeah. Okay. So it sounds like you've, I mean, our basics that we always look at is obviously illness and teething, which you've taken into account. And I mean, definitely when it comes to illness, you've got to keep, you've got to have a look at all the things that'll just make her comfortable, whether it's a decongestant that has been recommended or paracetamol if she's not feeling well and is teething. So you do need to take care of those things. And you also do need to make some allowances. But the one thing in terms of allowances, just we don't want to fall into any habits. And I'll talk about that as another point completely. We spoke last time about, you know, kind of that developmental stage where she is going through a leap, but she is also actually a proprioception seeker. That's why she's up on her legs early and bouncing. They tend to seek proprioception. Did you add in quite a bit of swinging in the afternoon?
Yeah, so look, we're not maybe as consistent with it as we should be, but when I sort of remember and I have the time, I do try and put her in the swing, like just before supper time. But yeah, like I say, maybe we're not consistent enough with it.
Yeah, I definitely would pop in a little bit more of that just because she is a sensory seeker. She's not watching TV, I presume, or screens.
No.
Yeah, okay, that's good, because that definitely does impact sleep at this age, because they're getting too much sedentary time as opposed to movement time, which is what they really need at this time. And then her day sleep schedule is spot on. So 45 minutes in the morning and a 90 in the afternoon is spot on. So that all sounds good. So that leads me around to two things that kind of peak up at this time as well. Actually, three things. The one is nutrition. How's her diet?
So she thankfully is in that stage before Santi got picky at about 15 months. So we are very lucky that she eats quite a varied diet, and she certainly is an enthusiastic eater. She's very hungry at the moment, actually, now that you mention it. We were actually about to drop the afternoon bottle because she wasn't really finishing it. And in fact, the current phase she's in, where she's absolutely smashing every single bottle and she's eating so much when she has her solids, she hasn't been as interested in her bottles for quite a long time now. Like, she drinks them, but she doesn't necessarily always finish them. Whereas at the moment she is drinking them down to the last drop, and seems to be kind of ravenous, and I'm giving her more snacks and things. So there's, I don't know if it's like a growth spurt but she's a hungry girl at the moment.
Yeah. So I think let's just quickly talk a little bit about diet. This is the age where milk starts to drop off, and that's totally normal developmentally. The fact that she's increasing is fine. We'll talk about that. But for other moms whose little ones are kind of loving their solids and not wanting their milk, that does happen. And then we usually do drop either the mid-morning or the mid-afternoon bottle. And so 3 to 4 bottles of milk in a day would be age appropriate. So she should be having kind of one on waking that may be slightly smaller if she's had that 4 a.m. So you can almost split that 4 a.m. into kind of 100 mils at 4 a.m. and then another 100 mils when she wakes up. And then one at 10, one at 2, and one at 6. So it's really like a kind of 6, 10, 2, 6. And either the 10 a.m. or the 2 p.m. will also become a reduced bottle, so like 100 mils. And that is very typical. In terms of her solid meals, she should be having breakfast, lunch, and supper plus 2 snacks that should happen. Those snacks should happen at around about the time of those mid-morning, mid-afternoon bottles. And the focus here is to make sure that she's having enough iron. This is the age where iron stores have depleted by 6 months, the stores that they have from pregnancy. And so they really do rely on nutrition, on solid nutrition, and also a little bit on bottle feeds if they're bottle fed, in that formula milk is iron fortified often, whereas obviously breast milk isn't. So moms, if you're listening and you're exclusively breastfeeding still, you really need to focus in on those meals. The places where food is generally fortified is in processed cereals and in formula milk. And if she's not having either of those, she is having formula milk. But if they weren't, then you would really want to make sure they're having really nice red meat options, some nice legumes. Otherwise, if they're on a vegetarian diet, and then obviously your dark green vegetables. And hopefully you pair those dark green vegetables with some vitamin C as well. So quite a nice recipe in the Weaning Sense book is actually our quinoa, spinach and berry recipe, because it's got the berries, which have got the vitamin C, and then the spinach. And so I would maybe pop one of those smoothies into her diet. So either as a mid-afternoon snack or else even as a meal in the evening. Often they might be pickier in the evening, and a smoothie might be easier. So, you know, you can also make up a kind of little, you know, one of the little bowls that, you know, that is kind of a really thick smoothie, and feed that to her almost like a puree as well. So, or, you know, have that for breakfast. Try not to put dairy with it. And the reason is that dairy interferes with the absorption of iron. So those are kind of the things you'd want to focus in on. And then obviously quite a high fat and high protein diet as well. So nice amounts. I'm not talking about like cutting out carbs. I'm talking about just making sure that she's having nice, healthy fats and healthy proteins. And I would definitely be increasing the quantity, particularly in snack times. She can almost have like five little meals a day, and that might assist. So that's definitely something I would look at, particularly because she's having this 10 p.m. wake up, 10, 11 p.m. wake up. So that's the one thing. The second thing that's very classic at this age is, of course, separation anxiety. They're still just busy navigating. Does mom still exist when I can't see her? So I would be playing lots of separation games, like where's Santi? Let's go find Santi and play hide and seek with him. And of course, she'll then learn that when you look for something, it is actually there, and that develops object permanence. And when that develops, they tend to settle in terms of their separation anxiety. Also, in terms of separation anxiety, does she have a doo-doo blankie or an attachment object of some sort?
She does. She has a little soft lammy. That is the sort of thing that I think she associates her sleep with. This is what she has when she's in her cot. That's what she puts her face on.
Okay, brilliant. And that's very important. Moms, if you don't have that at this age, you need to put it in place. So those are the first two things that I would look at, is nutrition and sleep anxiety, separation anxiety. And at that point, I think you've got it all covered. So my next question is, when she goes to sleep for her morning sleep, her afternoon sleep, and at bedtime, how does she fall asleep?
I throw her in the cot and then I walk out the room. That's the general strategy.
And she just goes to sleep on her own?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's absolutely brilliant. Okay, so that's the key thing, is that they need to be falling asleep on their own. And if she wakes at 10 or 11, does she then have the quick feed if you're giving it to her and then settle herself right back to sleep?
In the evening?
At like 10 p.m. if she wakes then.
Yeah, so normally what I do is I give her some water. And just make sure that she's got her dummy. And then sometimes I give her a cuddle, depending on how much she's howling. It does vary quite a lot. Sometimes it's more like it seems like almost it's happening in her sleep. But generally speaking, the water does the trick at that time. It's the wake, you know, like last night she woke up at 10, and actually my husband handled that one. I don't even remember it. I was fast asleep. And then at 3:30, she woke up, and that was a much more kind of protracted having to do rocking and cuddling, and then eventually give her a bottle kind of thing.
Okay, so at the 10, if you give her a little bit of water and her dummy, she falls back to sleep?
Yeah, usually. It's just sort of transient, that one.
All right, well then I would, and how long are you waiting before you respond to her?
Maybe not long enough.
Yeah, I would say 5 minutes, which sounds very long. But I would literally do that now, because she can put herself back to sleep. You've covered all the bases for sure. And she's probably just waking because she's coming into a light state of sleep and then just seeking you out. So my suggestion is tonight to just listen. If she does what I call ifing and butting, which is kind of a little bit of a cry and then kind of talking and then a little bit of a cry, I would actually leave her completely. If she's absolutely howling, wait for a minute or two at least to see if she'll resettle herself. And then the next thing you're going to do, so the first thing you're going to do is listen. The second thing you're going to do is use your voice. So you're going to say to her, where's your dummy? From outside the bedroom. So where's your dummy? And she probably won't find it at that point, because now she's heard your voice, she's going to want you in there. And then you're going to walk and you're going to say, where's your dummy? And put it in her hand. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to signal to her that if I wake up, I can actually reach for my dummy. And so I would actually go about it that way, is, you know, try to get her to use her dummy on her own. Probably would now stop using the water. I think she can probably just do it just with the dummy, but definitely you need to phase it in. Talk, well, for listen, then talk, then dummy into hand, never into mouth. And then obviously you must have about five dummies in her cot at night so that she can actually find one when you're not there. That would be my suggestion for that night waking. It is a pain, I know, but I think, you know, make sure that she's, if she is teething, use the paracetamol, make sure she's having a good diet, play the separation games, and then actually handle it with a little bit of behavior management in the middle of the night. And then the 4 a.m., I think you're doing the spot on thing. Give her half a feed. And that's because they then settle back to sleep, go through to the morning, and that 4 a.m. will eventually move out to later in the day. It'll move out to like 5 or 6. Yeah, so no magic ones here, but just little steps that can actually make a difference and hopefully will do so.
Yeah, no, thanks. That's actually, especially things like remembering to listen. I think that what often happens with me, and it's a kind of PTSD from Santi, where I got myself into a vicious cycle of thinking, well, I don't want him to wake up too much. I'm sure other moms can relate to this, that they have a tricky sleeper. I don't want him to wake up too much, so I'm going to rush in there at the first squawk to try and settle him before it gets out of hand, kind of thing, which is survival, but not entirely rational or necessarily aligned with the science. And so I think that in a way that's maybe what's happening at 10 o'clock. I'm like absolutely exhausted. I'm about to go to sleep, or I've just gone to sleep. And then the idea of having to sort of go through a whole, process with her at 10 o'clock is exhausting. So I just land up kind of going in and settling her, maybe the sort of quick and easy way, when maybe I need to just practice a little more patience, or indeed make it Vito's problem. And he, he's much better at that than me. And maybe he's to say, listen, babe, you're in charge between 10 and midnight. And, this is the process to follow. I'm not going to get involved. So I think maybe I'll do that route.
Exactly. And, you say that's how you're feeling. My firstborn is now 26. And I remember that thought like it was yesterday. Like if I quickly run in there quickly, he won't be fully awake. And of course, that's how you start habits. So definitely that is what lies behind this. And then also you can also try a little bit of white noise in the room. So maybe try that tonight, just playing it in the background and see if she'll sleep through that 10 p.m. wake up. It often does help as well. And then also just making sure that the room's a little bit cooler than you think it needs to be. So often, and I'm sure that it happens to most of us when it's hot, we wake up. And so, I used to think very early on in my parenting journey that babies need to be really warm to sleep well, but actually it's got to do with them also being a little bit cooler, same as us. So rooms nice and cool, kind of 18 to 21 degrees, which at the moment in Cape Town is obviously tricky, but that's what you'll be aiming for.
Yeah, we will certainly do a little bit of practicing of all these things and hope for the best. And also just do the thing that I've been doing a lot with baby number two, which is riding the wave and seeing where it takes us. Because, actually, believe it or not, any moms who are in the trenches with number one, it really does change. Next week or next month will be a whole different story. And that's the best way to get through the nights, I find, is to just remember that actually, tomorrow night will be an entirely different thing, and next week and next month. So you just have to go with it.
And are you using a baby monitor out of interest?
No. So she's right next door. We share a wall. So I listen, but I mean, it doesn't take a lot to wake me, to be honest. I mean, one little squawk and I'm tuned in.
You're listening. Yeah, no, absolutely. That's for most moms. But because often moms use baby monitors and we actually end up hearing too much. You almost don't want to hear everything, So I think not having a baby monitor is perfect. As long as your baby's room's within a shouting distance, you will hear them for sure. So that's good.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember with Santi, actually, we did have a monitor for a long time. And it got to the point where the sort of slightly tinny, almost kind of white noise that it made, because it was quite an old monitor we inherited from someone, when I turned it on at night, it actually used to give me anxiety. Not the sound of him making a noise, but the sound of the monitor. And I used to just get so stressed. It would ratchet up in me. Nothing would be happening, but I would just be getting more and more anxious. And then that was the point at which I thought, no, this is ridiculous. I'm going to turn it off. I can hear him quite easily. So I do think that, there are cases in which those monitors really can do more harm than good, certainly to your mental state.
Absolutely. No, couldn't agree more. So tell me, what are the positives? What is keeping her alive at the moment?
This episode is brought to us by ParentSense, the all-in-one baby and parenting app that helps you make the most of your baby's first year. Don't you wish someone would just tell you everything you need to know about caring for your baby? When to feed them, how to wean them, and why they won't sleep?
Parent Sense app is like having a baby expert on your phone guiding you to parent with confidence. Get a flexible routine, daily tips, and advice personalized for you and your little one. Download Parent Sense app now from your app store and take the guesswork out of parenting.
So tell me, what are the positives? What is keeping her alive at the moment?
Well, as the aforementioned, we sort of mentioned earlier, she is extremely cute. So it's so funny. Like, even when we have these really, really difficult nights, she's just such a delight in the day. Again, thank goodness for her. So Saturday night we had an absolute horror. She went down at, I think, about 6:30, and then 7:30 she was awake and she screamed for 3 hours. And I don't know what it was about. I tried painkillers, I tried rocking her, I tried playing Enya, you name it, I did it. Nothing worked until I eventually gave her another bottle. I mean, there's no way she was hungry. She'd eaten an enormous dinner and had a full bottle at bedtime. But anyway, I needed something to sort of tip her over the edge. So she's eventually got a bottle at about 11 o'clock. But the day preceding that, she was just completely angelic. She had two wonderful naps, exactly the amount of time they were meant to be. She had stayed at home playing with her dad in the morning while I'd taken Sandy to a party, and then we'd all gone to a friend in the afternoon, and she'd had lots of attention and lots of being sort of thrown around by other kids. And, you know, she was just a delight and smiling, and everyone's like, oh, what a lovely baby. So she does sort of certainly balance it out by being, yeah, just really engaging and, yeah, and sort of it's lovely to kind of watch her really start to understand language, I suppose. I think that's what it is. She's starting to understand when I say no to her. But she has this hilarious kind of cheeky face. So we have a rattan headboard in our bed, and in the morning the kids are both in the bed with us, and she'll often go and pull it. In fact, we've lost a few pieces off it from when Santi was a baby. And so whenever I see her going towards it, I say no. And then she looks at me with these wide eyes and like a half smile. And I'm like, no, it's not a game. Then I have to try and keep a straight face instead of starting to laugh. But she, oh, shame, she really gets away with murder, that child.
That's amazing. And in terms of communication, so she's starting to understand language. And I don't know if I've shared this with you, but receptive language, which is the understanding of language, precedes expressive language by about 6 months. It's quite a long period of time. It's quite interesting. So they really do start to understand long ahead of them actually starting to actually speak the words, which is super interesting. They also start to understand nonverbal communication. Has she started to understand, like, if you point to an aeroplane or an Adidas flying overhead, does she look where you're pointing?
Yes, she does. She definitely is. She's quite aware in that sense. So I would say, funny, now that you kind of mentioned it, I do think that she has quite a good sense of even just sort of gestures, and I suppose also kind of atmosphere, even to that degree. Like she just seems to be quite sensitive. Is not quite the right word. I don't mean it in that she's sort of easily disturbed, just that she has good. Yes, exactly.
Amazing. Yeah. So it's actually very interesting. This ability to look where somebody is pointing, in the direction they're pointing, is an incredibly important stage in verbal communication. And the reason for that is that in order to look where somebody's pointing, instead of looking at the end of their finger, you've got to know that they're trying to communicate something with you. So if you say, oh, there's an Adidas, you point, and she looked at the end of your finger, that would be that she isn't really getting the idea that you're actually looking and pointing up at something that she needs to look at. That's not at the end of your finger. That's like 30 meters away in the sky or something, you know? So we call it mind-mindedness. It's the knowledge that another human being has a mind. And it's obviously the foundation of language, because if we didn't understand that somebody had a mind, we wouldn't have the need to communicate with them. So children with communication deficits, and in particular autism, and so, you know, this kind of social communication deficits, they don't look where you're pointing. They look at the end of your finger, because they haven't actually got it in their head that you're trying to communicate something bigger with them. And so pointing is such an interesting milestone. It's, in a way, I make it, you know, I've got these favorite milestones. You shouldn't really have favorites, but I do. The first being smiling, the second being crawling, and the third being pointing, because each of those are so fundamental as a foundation for other milestones later. And actually, in one of our previous episodes that actually just flighted very recently, we spoke about how crawling was so important as a foundation for maths later. I mean, it's a big leap. Moms, if you haven't heard that episode, it was back when she was 7 months old. We discussed it. And but likewise, pointing is an absolutely incredible milestone. It's a foundation for mind-mindedness and being able to know that actually I need to communicate, because what she'll do is she'll first of all start to look where you're pointing, and then she'll start to point. So she'll go to the kitchen and she'll point, crawl in there and point at the fridge when she wants something to drink, or point at the nappy bag when she wants you to get something out. Has she started to do that?
No, not yet, but it just suddenly made me remember when Santi was doing that. It was so funny.
And then what she's doing is she's communicating her mind to your mind. And so without even being able to speak, she's now actually communicating. So very, very important milestone that she'll be doing there.
Yeah, I think I probably wasn't as aware of it with Santi. I didn't necessarily understand how early they kind of start that type of communication. But I'm definitely more aware of it with her. You know, just the fact that she can absolutely understand when I'm saying no to her is, you know, such a clue to kind of what's going on in her mind. And it's fascinating. She's also, I remember we spoke last time about how she was quite a chilled crawler. Well, she was obviously listening, because she suddenly become this incredibly fast crawler with so much determination and direction. So whereas before I could guesstimate where she would be if I had to turn around for 1 minute and turn back, I kind of know she'd still almost be in the same spot. Not so much anymore. She is on the other side of the house and, yeah, rushing around. You know, when they kind of crawl so fast and they've got the onesie on and they almost like slip, they've got no traction. And then she just sort of goes in one spot over and over again. It's so cute.
So precious. So being that she's your second, your house is probably very well baby-proofed already, but this is the age where we really do need to baby-proof the house. What sort of things have you looked out for and that you're very conscious of around baby-proofing?
So specifically, it's things like having locks on cupboards in the kitchen, because there in our kitchen, certainly there are a lot that are at her eye level, you know, and drawers as well, because also, you know, certainly in our kitchen, drawers are full of potato mashers and peelers and all sorts of things that I think can cause a bit of unintended injury. We don't really have any sharp corners, like our coffee table is actually an ottoman, and things like that can't really do her any harm. And certainly the playroom that she's in is also, you know, it's been well used by Santi. So there's nothing particularly dangerous in there. We also have locks on our toilets and things like that. So that's all actually still in place from when Santi was little. So we're quite lucky that it's mostly, you know, the bases are covered. What would you say are the most important things?
Yeah, so the two that are my most important, the one is water. So, I mean, it's really being super vigilant. My very first job out of university, I worked in a pediatric rehab facility in New York. And one of my first patients I ever had was a 16-year-old boy who had fallen into water as a baby. And it was such a shock for me to see what water damage, what brain damage due to drowning actually does. It's just absolutely horrific. And it's just so avoidable, but you've got to have eyes open for it. So ponds, swimming pools, toilets, and low areas where water is played with, like a little little water pond or even like a tray of water, like bath time, like you just cannot ever take your eye off them. And I think people used to, when I was a young mum, people used to think I was ridiculously obsessive. We had a net and a fence, and like I was obsessed with it, absolutely obsessed with it. I would not leave my children when they were near water. And all three of my children were swimming by 18 months. They were super early swimmers, very, very early. In fact, my middle child, who ended up being a brilliant swimmer, was even earlier than that. We, you know, I had taken them to swimming lessons with me. I didn't do drown proofing. I was more in the, it was more one of those kind of, it was called aquatots, and it was more like getting into the water with your little one. And just that was supposed to be that they just came to love water. But obviously there was a little bit of kind of independence with, if you fell in the water, how would you turn on your back? And I can remember that from a very little age, they were able to do that. But even with that, they were never left in a pool until they were like 6 years old without me sitting and watching them. It was just my obsession. So Number one, 100% water. And then number two would probably be loose furniture. So in particular, bookshelves that are loose. I mean, I know I can see your bookshelves are enormous and probably bolted into the wall, but any bookshelf that can be pulled onto a child. And I'm sure you heard, well, maybe you did or didn't, a couple of years ago, there was a child at a school in Johannesburg who managed to put a bookshelf onto themselves and actually died. It was at a playgroup, and it was devastating for the playgroup franchise. But the pulling a bookshelf onto yourself is a very common thing, and particularly with her because she's that child who does pull herself up on things. So those would definitely be my top two. Door closing and drawer jammers are optional in my mind because you can actually clear low-lying areas for and put Tupperwares in there and put the glasses up above. But the only thing is that they can slam their fingers, which is obviously, you know, not ideal. So yeah, those are definitely my top two. And then I guess the third one would also be electrical sockets.
And then the final one that I would also that nobody often thinks about are the lines from blinds. And those can get wrapped around necks. So one of the things that I did was, and it's, you know, what you need to do is actually plait the bottom ends of kind of strings from blinds so that they also can't get those wrapped around their neck. It's not a big risk, but it definitely is something that I look out for. But this is the age where, yeah, we need to baby-proof the house because you can't, like you said, she's so fast, you can't watch her all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. The water one's quite scary. I mean, we were talking about my brother last week when we were two, he drowned in a swimming pool and was flatlined and had to be resuscitated. Absolutely horrific for my mother. It's a sort of a family story. And I think all of us are quite paranoid about water safety as a result. I mean, thank God he was okay. But I mean, that oxygen deprivation was definitely, you know, played a role in his life. And it's also just, it's just traumatic. It's just plain horrible. Water is a big one, especially in this country when a lot of us are lucky to have pools and things like that. I mean, I remember when Santi was 6 months old and first was crawling, I immediately got onto the phone with a fence company and had a nice big flat fence put around our swimming pool, which thank goodness does a great job, but it's something to be very vigilant about.
It's interesting because I mean, you know me, and anybody who listens to my podcast knows that I'm extremely non-judgmental about parenting because I know everybody follows a journey. So, you know, you can choose pretty much any path of caring for your child and I'll back you. But the one thing I cannot back a person on is an open pool. And I've had some really quite serious confrontations with people where, I mean, in fact, the one situation was quite a well-known celebrity, in fact, who was going to be a PlaySense host, one of our PlaySense play groups. And we have a rule in PlaySense, obviously, because we host in people's homes, is that if you've got open water, it has to be double covered. And, you know, it was really, we're very strict about it. Anyway, she wanted to host. We were desperate for a host in that particular area. And she had an open pool. And I said to her, and she had a 2-year-old, not even 18-month-old. And I said to her, you can't do that. And, you know, it was really, and in the end, we didn't host in her home. I said to her, I'm sorry, but I'm not just absolutely not prepared to do it. And she said, we're trying to understand her rationale. Their rationale was their child will fall in the pool and she will learn. And I was like, yep, but okay. She might not be there when she does it. Really, really, for me, it's an absolute no-no. Open water is the big one. And then obviously you also get, I mean, the one that isn't around the home is just also where it's irresponsible parenting, as if a child's not in a car seat when you're traveling. You know,
that's the one that gets me when I'm driving around and I see a child bobbing around on the back seat.
Ooh, or worse, on the front seat.
My blood pressure so much. I want to get out and start screaming and beating people. Ooh, makes me so angry.
Yeah, no, I know. So I guess we are getting a little bit judgy here, but there are the safety things. They're the things that, you know, I think are the not negotiables.
No, absolutely. I mean, I suppose I can see how it might sound like judgment. I don't know. I think it's more like, a lack of consideration. I don't know. It's asking for trouble. There's not really an excuse for not having those things in place, if you ask me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as usual, you and I are very much on the same page. So, Juliet, has been wonderful to chat with you. I really, really have loved these chats. And we look forward to chatting again next month when she will nearly be one. I cannot believe it. It's crazy.
No, it's absolutely wild. I really can't wrap my head around it. I just don't know where the time's gone. It's such a different thing. I think, for any moms who are still on number one and are planning number two, I can just tell you that certainly from my experience and a lot of the people I know, their experience, it is really an entirely different experience. And goes so fast.
Yeah, it really does. Excellent. Well, thanks for your time again, Julie, and we'll catch up next month.
Okay, thanks, Meg. See you then.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone who joined us. We will see you the same time next week. Until then, download ParentSense app and take the guesswork out of parenting.